Greetings, you beautiful humans. This is Glenn Klein Online. It's Hump Day, Wednesday, February 27th, 2008. The only February 27th, 2008 in the history of humanity. Welcome in on this Hump Day spectacular known as Glenn Klein Online and the Gospel Revolution webcast heard around the world, featuring the musings and wisdom and insight and sometimes even the humor of the president of the Gospel Revolution from Houston, Texas. Please welcome Michael Williams. Michael!
Humor from Michael Williams? You've got to be kidding me.
Every so often, some peeks through. It's a beautiful thing for the beautiful humans.
Good evening, Glenn, and welcome to all of our visitors tonight.
And we're glad to have everybody with us on this Wednesday night, 1 week after our winter pledge drive. Actually, our winter pledge drive completed just in the last minute because we gave ourselves 21 days. And we're happy to report that we did amazingly well with things still being tabulated, just about $1,000 short of our $12,500 goal. And as was mentioned in the email that went out today, we had generous donations from Lee Lau of Hong Kong, as well as we have great names in the Gospel Revolution, by the way. It's not just great people. Lee Lau of Hong Kong donating, and also Dwayne Daku from Saskatchewan. Where is that? In Manitoba, right?
Saskatchewan?
Oh, no, it's Saskatoon. Saskatoon.
Yeah, Saskatchewan is Saskatchewan. It's not in anything except Canada.
Yeah, Saskatoon.
That's like saying, you know, what state is Tennessee in?
Oh, no. Saskatoon, I think, is in Manitoba, though, isn't it?
No, Saskatoon and Manitoba are two separate provinces in Canada.
Saskatoon's a province?
Saskatchewan.
No, but Dwayne Daku is from Saskatoon.
Saskatoon, Saskatchewan.
Oh, and now we know the rest of the story. Well, anyway, we did very well because you did so well, and it's nice to do good and do well at the same time. And that's what giving to this effort does. So if you feel free in your heart to do so, we're still looking for, we'd love to meet the goal. So if you got an extra $100 or like our brother Greg Amberge, sold something on eBay, or you want to add $10 a month to your monthly giving, just 10 people averaging a $100 gift will get us to that goal. And we're not going to spend obviously much time talking about that tonight, but we're very appreciative, Michael, and
absolutely.
The folks,
you know,
came through.
Even with coming up a little bit shy as of yet, this was the largest amount raised in a pledge drive so far since we started doing this just about a year ago.
And this is why we've been able to expand into three phone lines and
absolutely
and frankly continue to webcast weekly. Speaking of the phone lines, with me now fully ensconced in the Glenn Klein Online studios back in Tampa, Florida, from northern Wisconsin, I brought the chilly weather. Going to be in the 30s here in Tampa Bay.
You can't get away from it.
Yeah, but it's going to be minus 10 in Eagle River tonight, so that's without the wind chill. So I'm very nicely toasty. In the Glenn Klein Online studios in Tampa, Michael in Houston, and you on the phone lines, we hope, tonight. Patrick L. Jones waiting to hear from you at 1-800-436-3260. Pat will take your call and get you online with Michael and yours truly promptly by you calling 1-800-436-3260, 1-800-436-3260. And the shows are always much more interesting as Michael is, and certainly as interesting as I am. It's always much more interesting when we get feedback and hear from you, and it always seems like it takes one or two people to get on the phone right away to get the momentum going, and then an hour is gone. So if you're listening live tonight and it's between 9 and 10 Eastern time, United States time, get on the phone and talk to us live. Otherwise, you can always feel free to email us your questions at webcast@gospelrevolution.com, webcast@gospelrevolution.com. Well, as was mentioned before at the outset of the webcast, today is the only February 27th, 2008, and today was the day, Michael, that perhaps the father of the modern conservative political movement in the United States, William F. Buckley, passed away at 82 years old, working at his desk. William F. Buckley, of course, the founder of the name of the magazine right now. Only read it a thousand times. National Review.
National Review, yes.
And really credited with reinvigorating what is today the modern conservative movement in the United States. And whether one thinks that's good or bad, many folks perhaps think it's bad. But, Michael, when William F. Buckley breathed his last breath at his desk this afternoon, what happened to him and why?
Well, we have really good news for his family. If anyone had any doubts, and even those who would think that William F. Buckley's conservatism itself would be worthy of going to hell, we know that beyond the shadow of a doubt, through the sacrifice offered by Jesus, being himself, and then becoming the high priest over his own sacrifice, for sin, which he did not have to offer for himself, but only for the people of this planet, was totally successful in being God in the flesh, was totally successful in paying for and redeeming William F. Buckley from the effect of the first Adam's transgression. And whether he knew it or not, William F. Buckley's entire life was lived as an absolutely holy, righteous, and perfect man in the eyes of God, and he drew his last breath and stepped into the presence of God.
You know, I know that's hard for some folks to hear about certain individuals, but we really believe it. See, we're not ashamed of this gospel. It is a gospel of peace. It is a gospel of grace. It is the power of God unto salvation to everyone who believes. Jewish people, non-Jewish people, conservative people, liberal people, people that don't have any, have no political stripe. I remember, Michael, when I believe it was Ronald Reagan was president, a CIA operative named William Buckley was killed, was taken hostage. Remember all the hostage crisis during those years? And William Buckley was killed by terrorists. And what happened to that William Buckley, and what has happened or will happen to those that assassinated him?
Well, that's the incredible news about the gospel, is that, as you mentioned, that we certainly are not ashamed of, and we do not have to sidestep the question as the Grahams do, Anne and Franklin, as they've so eloquently sidestepped the issue, as Joel Osteen, as much as I love Joel, sidesteps the issue when asked on Larry King every time about even just the Jewish community, much less a terrorist. But I am very grateful, not just any, I don't know of any other word to say right now except that I'm very grateful to know and understand and to proclaim that he and his terrorist assailants are all in the presence of God, rejoicing because of the work of Jesus Christ. You know, it's amazing how that politics and religions and strife and all kinds of things separate us here on this planet. But Glenn, I think that the long-term effect of us permeating this planet with this information is that those things begin to diminish, is that the divisions begin, men will always have different ideas, but I think that it can actually, and we've watched it happen, to watch the gospel and the power of the revelation of the grace and peace that God is not angry with anybody. The gospel of peace, some people ask, well, what is the gospel of peace? The gospel of peace means you are never going to get what you deserve. And then the gospel of grace, what is it? It means you are going to get what you never deserved. And that is standing in the presence of God, and that includes all of the human race. And the consistency of that message, which we don't shirk from at all, is so powerful. It is just so powerful. While people take issues on every side, we are certainly a nation that where people can voice their opinion and without threat of being thrown in prison, that you can have an opinion no matter how radical. But the fact of it is that no matter what our opinions are, no matter which side we stand on, you know, the of the law or even God's law, because thank God that is part of the redemptive process of the work of the cross, is that Jesus took the law out of the way completely. He did not inoculate the law and make it less effective. Jesus did not take the law and neuter it so that its voice would be a little higher and it might be weaker, but Jesus totally took the law and nailed it to his cross. He took it completely, and the statements made in the New Testament is that it's been done away with. It's been abolished, and it's amazing when we have, in the past years, as we've brought this up to some of the churches, they are absolutely enraged that we would say that the law of God has been abolished. And but that is exactly what Paul said, that it had been abolished, that it had been done away with, it had been put away, and that is the gospel that we're very, very grateful to be able to share and to have in our hearts and minds, that really does begin to reshape your thinking about other people and yourself.
While we are clearly stating that according to the law of God, which doesn't exist anymore, the murderers of William Buckley, the CIA chief, in the 1980s, they're not guilty of murder in God's eyes. But what should be done to those people, Michael, here while they're still on the earth?
Well, we have laws for that. You know, we just had a gentleman I sat and watched, Bobby Cutts, who killed his girlfriend and their unborn child, which was to be born any day. And from what I can tell, based on most people's views, got a lighter sentence and was sentenced to life in prison with the possibility of parole after, I think it was 57 years. And that's exactly what should have happened to him. I think the jury came back with a good verdict on that.
See, well, one thing that people don't understand is that just because God's law has been done away with and has been fulfilled and at the cross and done away with at the cross, it doesn't mean that the United States of America or Canada or Australia or the United Kingdom or every nation under the face of the earth, they have laws that may or may not be just, but those laws still are in effect, aren't they?
Yes, absolutely. And people say, yes, but we base our laws based on God's law. Well, no, we're not making you keep laws that offend, that if you don't keep this law, you're offending God, which is what the religious right wants to do.
Right. And what they say is that our laws are based on God's laws. Well, they want to have, for example, capital punishment for capital crimes, But according to the Bible, there was a myriad of capital crimes. If you were disobedient to your parents, that was a capital crime. If you had sex with your wife during her period, that was a capital crime. Why don't they emphasize all of God's law to be transferred to our law? If you worked on the Sabbath, which, by the way, biblically is our Friday sundown to Saturday sundown, you were to be killed, Michael. That was a capital crime. But they never say, well, our law is based on God's law, so therefore we should kill people who work on Friday nights.
Well, yeah, and not only that, I mean, you know, well, the list can go on and on, but even in under our laws here, which most people support, that a child doesn't face the same penalty of the law as an adult, but under the under Moses' law, if a child turned 13 years old and still was rebellious to his parents, he was to be executed.
And his parents were to be executed.
Yes. So we, I mean, in America right now, we would just have to go ahead and just turn the gun on each other and all of us execute each other. But, no, and that's the inconsistency. See, we love the law of God. I have taught my love for God's law for years. I love that the law says that a child should be executed at the age of 13 if he rebels against his parents. I love that the law of God says that if somebody does work after sundown on the Sabbath, that they should be executed. I love that God's law says that all of these things, I mean, the list can go on and on. There's no need in being so terribly redundant here. We know not only that, but if in other situations, if you dishonor God's law, even the ones that don't carry the penalty of death, which are many, which are not in our, most of them are not in our society at all, that you are declared unclean. And you're to be shunned. You're not right with God. You are now outcast. But see, I love God's law. I can sing with David. I think, Glenn, I can sing this with David, how much I love God's law, more than any evangelical preacher on TV or any church in America or around the world today. I believe I can say I truly love God's law because I know why it was given. You can't say you love God's law when it condemns you to hell. You can't say that. Why did David say he loved God's law? Well, David was the one who got the revelation and under the old covenant and said, blessed is the man who God makes righteous who hasn't done anything right. And blessed is the man who, when he does wrong, God doesn't hold it against him. He got the right revelation from the law. That's the reason David said, I love God's law. Because he saw that God's law was not given as a pathway to righteousness. It was given as a revelation of a condition that existed through the first Adam. And he saw that. And he saw it clearly, and he rejoiced and said, I love God's law. Now, let me tell you something. These people do not love God's law because they say it's still in effect, and then they dishonor God's law by not preaching it clearly. They don't preach that you're supposed to stone a child to death at the age of 13 if he's rebellious. They don't preach that if you eat seafood, you are unclean in the eyes of God. They don't teach that when a woman is in her menstrual cycle, that for 10 days she cannot touch a pot or a pan or sit down on a seat. They dishonor God's law. You say, well, Mike, are you saying you are for all that? No, that's just it. They are the ones who are selective about God's law, Glenn. They are selective. I am not selective about God's law. I believe in all of God's law, but I also believe that it has all been nailed to the cross of Jesus Christ. Man, somebody ought to say, that's good preaching, Roberts.
Good preaching, Roberts. Yeah, it was revealed last week, folks, what good preaching Roberts means. And if you didn't hear last week's program, please log on to the archives at glennkleinonline.com. And the February 20th edition will reveal that for you. That is good preaching. Wait, there's some good news, Michael. There's a lot of good news. But I picked this up yesterday at the airport when I was flying home from Wisconsin. And this comes from the USA Today. It says, a new map of faith in the USA shows a nation constantly shifting amid religious choices, unaware or unconcerned with doctrinal distinctions. Unbelief is on the rise, and immigration is introducing new faces in the pews, new cultural concerns, new forces in the public square. And they give all kinds of percentages, but one of the interesting things that I noted was that 44% of Americans say they're no longer tied to the religious or secular upbringing of their childhood.
Yes.
They've changed religions or denominations, adopted a faith for the first time, or abandoned any affiliation altogether. That's good news. I mean, that's
good news.
Yeah, that shows that people are thinking outside the religious box. And, you know, frankly, folks, one of our jobs is to fill that vacuum with what we see as the knowledge and the information. The reason, Michael, that we love the law is because we understand why God gave it, that God did give it, and he gave it for a reason, and the purpose was fulfilled, and it resulted in reconciliation between himself and all of humanity, and therefore all of humanity to each other. That's why we love the law of God.
Absolutely. And I you know, I actually, even as we're talking about it, Glenn, I mean, I can feel my love for God's law. Can you imagine if God had not given his law and man were left to his own righteousness? We would have never, ever, ever been able to have a revelation or to see the righteousness of God whatsoever. We would have never had confidence. We would have all been killing our children because they were rebellious. We would have all been feeling guilt and condemning one another. I mean, it's bad enough as it is. Can you imagine to the degree if God's law had not been in full effect to give us a full revelation of a condition that existed before the law was ever given, so that we could know the condition that we would have after the law was done away with through the blood of Jesus Christ? I have a love affair with God's law. I dearly love God's law, but I love it for the reason God gave it, not for the reason that men use it. And there is a drastic, drastic difference between the two. When men use God's law, it equals bondage. When God used his law, it was designed for freedom, because it was used to bring us to faith. It was used to bring us to Christ. It was used to bring us to that knowledge of what the cross would accomplish. The cross is finished. It is done. And for people to use the law now to incorporate a relationship with God defined by obedience to any of God's laws is like saying, well, I need at least two or three drops, maybe even just one drop of the blood of a goat or a bull to add to the blood of Jesus to make sure that his sacrifice is sufficient. And we're telling people that is hideous. It is hideous, as Paul said in Galatians, to add one single law, even the simple law of circumcision for children on the eighth day. Paul said the law of circumcision, which did not include the child's will or anything at all. This is a simple one. You know, if we're going to keep one, let's keep the one that is imposed on us at day eight when we were children. But even concerning that one, Paul said, if you add the law of circumcision, not the law, he didn't even take it to the law of murder. He kept it down to just the law of circumcision. Even if you add this law of circumcision to the grace of God, you have totally departed from the grace of God, and you are now living life on your own. He didn't say you were going to hell. He said you have fallen from grace, and the work of the cross in your life has become ineffective. In your living, nothing can make the cross ineffective as far as eternity and righteousness and redemption is concerned, but we make the cross of no effect in our life, not by doing something wrong. It is by doing something right and thinking that it makes us right with God. That's the moment that we do despite to the Spirit of grace. That is the moment that we insult the blood of Jesus Christ. That's the moment that we bring him to an open shame. Is the moment that we begin to think that doing it right will make us right with God.
Or even doing it wrong makes us wrong with God. It's the same thing. I just was listening this last weekend to your teaching, Fruits of Self-Righteousness. And that was a strong point that you were making, that the sense of guilt is just the opposite side of the coin of pride. And while it doesn't affect in any way, shape, or form how God views us, it does impact the way that we think that God views us, or the way that we view God's view of us. And that can be just as harmful, that's way more harmful, than not believing in God at all, or certainly viewing that God sees everyone as righteous and holy.
Absolutely. And you know, Glenn, I've just got to go back to what you said earlier about the seismic shifts that are going on around the world about beliefs and religions and things like that right now. And let me say that this to those who are our financial supporters. You know, I can't thank you enough, because I'm not thanking you just from a position of being able to pay the bills of what we do and the fact that this is my life's work and things like that. Glenn, I want to thank people because I know in my heart, the deepest part of me tells me that this is our time. This is our time. This is what we've been waiting for. And the people who've embraced this gospel, and now who are this influx of people who are beginning to support on a monthly basis, or even the one-time gifts, whatever it is, they are putting us in a position to allow the voice of this to go forth. You know, we had Dennis, who, bless his heart, who, I understand when you've been abused by the church with money, and even though he embraces everything that I teach, that I know of, I won't incriminate him as to believing everything, but he believes the gospel. But he got very upset because we were addressing the issue of money. And I understand where he was coming from, because of the abuse where money was concerned. But you've got to understand that it is this issue that when we have the funds, that we are able to do things with those funds that give us a voice in places that we don't have a voice. And it is an urgent thing now. It is an urgency. And, you know, I don't want to steal political speeches, because somebody will accuse me of not coming up with my own words, but to quote a politician, it is the urgency of now. It is, in fact, it was borrowed from Martin Luther King, who is one of my heroes, because of his vision of equality, not just between black and white. What made Martin Luther King successful in the civil rights movement pertaining to black people in this country is that he had a vision that all people, all colors, all races, all around the entire planet would not be seen differently or treated differently. And because of that, he was able to take a group of people to, as he said, the promised land. This is what he was wanting to do. And that march is still continuing, and that battle is still on.
Yeah, and I'll tell you something. Of course, Martin Luther King was assassinated in 1968, and here we are 40 years later, and with the very real possibility of electing a man of color to the presidency of the United States. Now, regardless of where you folks are politically, and if you've listened to this webcast at all, you know that I am a libertarian in my leanings, consistent with my spiritual beliefs as well. But regardless of where you are on the political end of things, it is amazing that the United States is looking at possibly nominating and electing a man of color to the highest office in the land. That's progress, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not saying it's the promised land, but those things are tangible results of what Martin Luther King has done, and we are seeing tangible results too in our effort. I mean, just the fact, and obviously we're not the only ones, and there is a spiritual reality that is taking place. How it works, who knows? But when you have 44% of one of the most religious countries on the earth, 44% of the population questioning and leaving the faith of their families, that's incredible. For generations, Americans have stayed with the same religion and the same political party and the same social mores as those of their family. And the fact that folks are thinking for themselves is a very, very good sign. It's a sign that we're headed in the right direction. I want to remind everybody that you're listening to Glenn Klein Online. It's about halftime of this edition of the Gospel Revolution webcast with Michael Williams. I want you to pick up the phone right now and call us at 1-800-436-3260. If you're listening live, and it's around 9:30 Eastern Time in the United States on Wednesday night, that means we're here to take your call. 1-800-436-3260. We'd love to hear from you tonight. If you're out there listening, please pick up the phone. If you've called several times before, don't hesitate. That's we want to hear from you. At this point, you're an experienced caller. We like those. But we like rookie callers, too. So call us at 1-800-436-3260 if you're listening on the archives. Feel free to email us anytime your questions and comments at webcast@gospelrevolution.com. That address once again, webcast@gospelrevolution.com. We've got lots of questions queued up, and as you folks know, we get to them as we go through them. So just keep listening to future webcasts if you don't hear your question addressed or your comment addressed, and it will be. Michael, in the email that was sent out today, it was talked about something that has been fomenting in your mind and heart about the issue of loss and how the gospel, the good news, gets people through loss in their lives. And if you've lived for very long at all, folks, you know that that's one thing that all human beings share in common is the sense of suffering and the sense of loss. And I just wanted you to share with the beautiful humans a little bit, Mike, about what has been going on in your mind and how this has been impacting your thoughts.
Well, I think, throughout my life, I have been observing. I have had, almost without my volition involved, an observation of people's response to loss. There's been times when I've gone through like just a financial loss, and I've been devastated. I've gone through the loss of a friendship and been devastated. And then I look around the world, and I'm my mind is thinking back now to about 2 years ago, a story of a woman who this was in one of the countries where there was such ethnic violence. I won't even try to say which one, but the woman had watched her husband slaughtered. She had watched her children slaughtered. She had been raped and beaten to death and thrown into a river, and she washed up on the bank, and as it went, she, it turned out, out that she had, of course, had was not beaten to death. She survived the attack on her life. She was taken into some form of shelter, where she later found out that as a result of the rape, she was infected with HIV and AIDS. And I mean, as I was hearing this story, it was like, my God, you know, where do you just roll over and die and say I can't anymore? But she didn't. And as the story continued, this woman had wound up in a situation where she found someone to help finance her, like $500 or something, to start a small business. And out of that business, the small business, whatever it was, which I'm sorry, I cannot recall the story in its entirety. It's not an urban legend. I was watching this on the news. And out of that, in the country that she was in, that she developed a business and became a successful businesswoman and an entrepreneur. And I watched that. I looked at my own situation and the issue of my sexuality. I attempted suicide 3 times, my sexuality being a part of that whole issue and the loss of feeling. That loss was a feeling that I had lost my relationship with God and could not have a relationship with God. And as I became an advocate in later years then for people to leave any semblance and actually to be delivered from their sexual orientation, as I was talking to these people, I thought everybody was devastated by their sexuality, and I had mothers bringing their kids in and talking to me, and they weren't suicidal, they weren't in other words, I watched and I saw people so devastated by things that others, you know, they recovered from. But over the years, in my 55 years of living, the one thing that I've observed, and I believe this in my heart, is that the one thing that all human beings come into this world with a gift from God is the ability to suffer loss and to recover from loss, and not only to recover from loss, but allow the heart to determine exactly how that loss is going to affect your life. Now, the one thing that we know is that loss is a part of life. Now, people can figure into their doctrine anywhere that they want that loss is. The one thing that that I think that causes people not to recover from loss is when they take it personally. Folks, I remember living most of my life that every time something would happen to me, I took it personally. It's like, why me? And you remember the statement from many years ago that came to my heart, you know, the thing that the question why. And I came up with a statement that the question why will always blind the eye. And we become blinded when we're obsessed with why the loss took place. Loss is just a part of human life, just the same as gain is. But the issue of defining loss, and actually the issue of defining gain, is the thing that creates the type of character that we walk in that is beneficial for ourselves and for those that we love and the entire planet. There is a character that comes out of loss, or there is a defeat that comes out of loss. But I think, really do think, that the most important thing about the issue of loss is that until I learned the gospel, I took loss personally. If you you know, I remember, you remember Bruce Almighty, and he gave such, where Jim Carrey gave such a wonderful performance, in that all of his losses he took personally. The loss of his job, the loss of his car, the loss of his, you know, his car breaking down, he took it personally. You know, why me? Why me? And he was continually spiraling down because of this of his inability to embrace loss. Now, loss is a part of human life. You are not going to avoid it. And as you said earlier, no one who's listening to us has ever avoided loss. The sad thing about it is that for many years of my life, I became involved in a religious belief system called the Word of Faith Movement, which was designed that if you believed just right, you would not suffer loss. And that if loss was in your life, it meant that you weren't living right, or that something was wrong in your relationship with God if there was any such thing as loss whatsoever. And over the years, I've watched all of these guys experience the losses they said would never happen if you truly believed, if you embraced the Word of Faith doctrine. And I've watched all of them suffer loss. We've all suffered loss, except in their cases, they try to hide it. I mean, all of my heroes of the Word of Faith movement have gone through incredible losses.
They either try to hide it or they justify it with doctrinal manipulation that you never heard from them before they suffered that actual loss.
Yes, absolutely. So, but it has been on my heart. I don't really understand why yet, except that it is a... you know, the one thing that my heart is geared for is finding a common denominator. I'm always looking for that thing that makes us all exactly alike. And on the spiritual side of it, the one thing that makes us all alike is the work of the cross.
Yeah, we found it, didn't we?
We found
it. We found a major common denominator. It just happens to be in the Bible.
Absolutely.
The very book that is used to divide people so outrageously and audaciously is the very book that describes our common denominator and our oneness and our holiness in God through the
Absolutely.
Work of the cross. It's one of the great ironies in the history of the planet, without question.
It really is, and that it is derived from the very same book, and not in verse form, but in chapter form, in book form, in defining actually, and even looking to that which Jesus himself called the scriptures. And so it has been powerful. But on the human experience, I think, if not the, it is one of the most, one of the things that is the most common, the thing that would be the most common denominator about the human experience is loss. Is enduring loss. Now, out of loss comes everything about life that you can imagine. It is either going to, out of loss comes either bitterness, anger, resentment, revenge, depression. The list just goes on and on and on and on. But out of loss also can come just the opposite to those things. Now, the one thing that I know that takes that, see, I believe that no matter what you believe, that every human being is designed to endure and recover from loss and actually become better. To have their character honed even sharper to where that their own character is more of a benefit to themselves and to the rest of the planet. That's a part of just being a part of the human race.
Well, you know, if we were created in the image of God, and again, the email today alluded to this, God himself demonstrated the ability to deal with loss when he lost his only begotten son.
Absolutely.
He lost Adam and Eve in the garden. Adam, where are you? Ooh, that's good. That's a heavy revy right there.
Absolutely.
God asked that question. Now, obviously, God knew where he was, but he had lost Adam for a moment.
Yeah.
And so much of my understanding, Michael, through not only your teaching, but just my own study and contemplation of this, is that we have a larger paradigm and a bigger picture in our mind about what this thing is all about. And you mentioned that all human beings have, from their birth, the capacity to overcome and to endure loss, regardless of what they believe. And we see the fruit, if you will, of thinking that somehow God's upset with us, or what am I doing wrong, or why me? And yet so people still get through that.
Absolutely.
You mentioned the woman that suffered the genocidal attack in her country and then rose above that. Who knows if she believed in the gospel? Probably didn't.
Most likely not.
But how, once you contemplate the gospel and meditate the gospel and understand, have been received by it and you have received it, what effect do you think that that has on the individual as we experience losses in our lives? And how does that work, do you think?
Well, I think actually the New Testament tells us a little bit about it, that out of these things that tribulation or loss, if you will, but you've got to understand that Paul is talking about in light of the gospel when he said tribulation worketh patience, and patience works endurance, and endurance faith, and all the way down the line. And that this is a character-building experience. Loss, when you understand the gospel, loss is a character-building experience. All loss in the gospel is a character-building experience.
And loss is a character-building experience even for people who are in the church or that don't believe in God or whatever. But here's the character that we're talking about. When you come through that, and, you know, both you and I can appreciate what we're talking about. We've experienced very personal loss because we've lived for a while, just like you folks have who are listening, and you don't know how you're going to get out of it. And you don't know if you're ever going to have your right mind back, if you will. And you come out of it, the character that's left, Michael, is more loving, more understanding, less bitter towards those who may have taken from us.
Yeah.
And it's an incredible experience to come out on the other side. And many times losses are involving other human beings. And to not have such scar tissue and such bitterness encasing our hearts, somewhere along the line, the gospel must have had an effect literally in transforming our souls. That's the saving of our souls. Even when we don't feel it, apparently there's still some effect and a significant effect and an impact on the way that we think and therefore how the way we conduct our lives moving forward.
Yes, absolutely. And, man, I tell you what, Mike Matzy has been a real inspiration to me in the last week or so, and he has gone through some loss. He's gone through quite a bit of loss financially, and then to hear him find his own heart in the subject of giving, and to come to that point where that the loss did not define to him whether or not he was a giver. He actually came through the loss and found his own heart again in the subject of giving and being able to share and to be himself and to have that part of him come alive again. And I was talking to him earlier, in fact, and he said, you know, he said, it was amazing to have such delight to write out the check to Mike Williams ministry and to write out the check to St. Jude's and another charitable organization that he supports. And he said, I found myself again. And even though he had gone through financial loss and is still dealing with that, he found himself. And now he is in a position now to where you say, well, now is the giving going to get him out of it? No, what the giving does, actually, him finding his heart is what produced the giving.
Right.
And in the middle of that, what that does is free Michael's heart to be able to observe what his options are.
Yes.
See, when you are crushed and broken, you're afraid to make choices. You're afraid to move forward. And, you know, he was telling me about the about a situation that came up to where he had an opportunity to make somewhat of an investment of something that has a potential of return. And he said it's the first time he's done it ever since all of these major losses have taken place. And so he found his heart. Does that mean that this particular one is going to be the thing that because Michael, that's what Michael does. He's an investor and entrepreneurial. But see, the thing of it is that when Mike found his heart again and did not let the loss, he did not let the loss dictate what he believes. He let what he believes dictate the loss. He saw the loss through different eyes. Mm-hmm. He saw it differently because of the gospel. And he saw it, and I tell you what, God is so intricately in woven into the heart of man. People say, well, do you believe that God is personally involved in human life? That's hard to answer because at what point do you leave you off and God start? What point do you leave God off and you start?
Right.
You're in Christ and Christ is in you.
Right. It's
God, he is one with God. God is one with Christ. Christ is one with us. People ask me what they believed about the Trinity. I said, I don't believe in the Trinity. And they said, what do you believe in? I said, I believe in quad unity. And they said, what is that? And I said, that's the Father, Son, Holy Ghost, and me. And I believe in the quad unity of God. This is a one thing that we're dealing with. In fact, it's not just me. It's the entire human race that the power of the cross. Can you imagine what Christianity has done to neuter the power of this gospel? So anyway, in the process of this, this is what we're saying. We're not trying to get people to muster up enough faith to reach out to God. We're trying to convince people of what the faith of God has already done.
Right, and also to suggest, folks, that it's the gospel's a good thing to think about. The gospel's a good thing to talk about. We don't know exactly how things are going to end up, but one thing we do know is that the Bible describes the meditating or the muttering of the good news, the sacrifice, the burial, the resurrection of Jesus, this quad unity that Michael just talked about, as leading to salvation, the renewing of the mind. I mean, the gospel and the concept that Paul outlines in the New Testament writings is the original psychology. It was dealing with the psyche of humanity. And really, at the end of the day, what it has been and is man's problem with God is not God. It's how we view how he views us.
Absolutely.
If you go through these losses and these traumas and these tribulations, as Paul called them in the King James, and you think it's bad enough to go through this stuff, but if you think that God's trying to punish you somehow, or that God's got it out for you, it is quadruply hard.
Oh,
it is a thousand, it's a million times harder. This is what causes people to kill themselves, and as Michael talked about earlier, to commit suicide, or to attempt suicide, rather. Well, Michael, we know this is going to be an entire teaching, and we are just literally skimming the surface. But I thought maybe in our last 5 minutes we might get an email in from one of our listeners, if that's all right. But just stay logged on, folks, because it's just going to get richer. And this letter comes in to us from Jason from Tennessee, your old stomping ground.
Yes.
And Jason asks Michael, he says, in John chapter 12, verse 48, is Jesus basically saying that if your heart and mind stay on the law of on the law on the day of the cross, that you are judged? I know he says he won't judge you, and if he doesn't judge you, then the Father doesn't either. So all I can see that would judge you, as he says, is the word he says. So just to reiterate, John 12:48 says, he that rejects me and receives not my words has one that judges him. The word that I have spoken, the same shall judge him in the last day.
Yes, and it did. Very good observation. And in fact, the word that Jesus spoke, that he said would judge us, was judged in the body of Jesus Christ. You see, we have got to understand the one-man doctrine of the New Covenant and the one-man doctrine of the Old Covenant. There's only one man that God was dealing with in the Old Covenant, and that was Adam. There's only one man that Jesus, that God's dealing with under the New Covenant, and that was Jesus, the last Adam. And when he said, when Jesus talked about that his words would judge them, his words were the ones, the very thing that took him to the cross, Glenn. Because it was his own words that the law, what Jesus was teaching was the law of God. He admitted that he was teaching the law of God. He was the one who said, the law says this, but this is the true definition of the law. It's not just whether you commit adultery, it's if you even have a thought of lust that you are condemned. And he said, these words is what's going to judge mankind. And in a twist of the most divine act of love, was the very man who said these words, I'm not going to judge you, my words are going to judge you, and then stepped in front of the bus, if you will, of judgment, and was lifted up on the cross willingly, because he made that decision in the Garden of Gethsemane, because he knew that the words that were to judge the entire human race, that he had decided to take upon himself. And he suffered the judgment that was to come, that was inscribed by the law upon the whole human race. It came upon one man. And even when that judgment of his own words came upon the human race, guess where the human race was? We were all tucked safely in the loins of Jesus Christ. The very same that every man came out of the loins of the first Adam, every man went back into the loins of the last Adam and was protected while God resolved his dispute with the human race in the body of one man, which then resulted in settling that dispute, resulted in the death of Jesus Christ. And then at his resurrection, and where was the whole human race? When Jesus went into the grave, the whole human race, and we're talking about God's perspective. That's the thing that we miss about the revelation of the scriptures. This is not man's perspective of God. This is God's perspective of man. He saw the whole human race go into the body of Jesus. He took the whole human race. Jesus drew the whole human race, according to Ephesians, when he was hung on the cross, he drew the entire human race into his body, thus fulfilling the scriptures about being hidden in the cleft of the rock and in the shadow of the Almighty from the scriptures of the Old Covenant. And when he hid us inside himself, then he said that if I be lifted up, I will draw all of this judgment unto myself. Even the judgment of his own words, Glenn, even the judgment of his own words came down upon him. And it took him to his grave. And when he went to his grave, he took the entire human race to his grave with him. And when the Bible says that thou shalt not leave my soul in hell, talking about a quote from the Old Testament, the term hell there means grave.
Mm-hmm.
And it says that thou shalt not leave my soul in the grave. And when Jesus went into the grave, the entire human race went into the grave. Then in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, I'm quoting scriptures and stuff here. I'm almost feeling like Jack Van Impe. This is crazy. that makes you Roxella, you know.
You do a much better Roxella than I do for some reason. I'm not exactly sure why that is. But
so we go into the grave with Jesus. And we come out of the grave with Jesus. And when we come out of the grave with Jesus, we not only come out of the grave, Glenn, when we are raised, when Jesus ascends into heaven, we ascend into heaven with him and are seated in heavenly places with Christ Jesus. This process is validated from the scriptures recorded by Paul and defined to us in such clear terms that to separate one human being, one soul left out of the cross, would have been a total failure of the cross. If one single human being were to suffer punishment and to suffer being cast into hell or separation from God, if any soul, the cross would have been an absolute and total failure if even one would have been left out, because it would have left the scriptures unfulfilled, because the scriptures did not foretell of a time when Jesus would die on the cross and give people options to be redeemed. The scriptures foretold of a time when Jesus would come into this earth and he would redeem this planet by his own strength. The arm of the Lord is not short that it cannot save, and the power of God raised Jesus from the dead, thus raising the entire human race from the dead, and thus the entire word that Jesus said that we would all be judged by was actually judged in the cross.
Yeah, we were judged by it on the cross.
We were judged by it because that was the last day.
It's good news.
That was the last day of that entire covenant's existence and the law's existence on the face of planet Earth.
And that ended the separation and the state of sin that humanity found itself in because of that first man, Adam. And
absolutely. You cannot take the comparison of the first Adam and then divorce it from the revelation of the second.
That's why it was there in the first
lunacy.
Place. That's why we went through it in the first place, according to Jesus. That was
absolutely.
He believed that the story of Adam and Eve were in the scriptures. And he said, that's all. He said, the law, the Psalms, the prophets, all about me. And that's a good place to finish and end with the Alpha and the Omega tonight. It's all about him. It all starts with him. It all ends with him. But speaking about hell, as we were just a moment ago, Michael, a seminar this weekend at the Freedom Worship Center in beautiful Cypress, Texas, What About Hell? So you guys are going to be talking
yes,
about hell this
will.
Weekend in Houston.
We'll be talking about hell all day long.
You're going to be giving them hell. You can call the office there if you're interested at 281-970-9810. And that's this coming weekend at the Freedom Worship Center. And then, Michael.
And our space is greatly limited. We need to know if you are coming.
We would love to know.
You really must call if you are coming.
And also, then Michael is scheduled next month, March 22nd and 23rd, for a Champions of Grace meeting in Plano, Texas with Mark and Kathy Eaton. And their phone number is 972-248-5078. All this information is available on the GospelRevolution.com webpage. Go there frequently. Enjoy the information. And let us hear from you during the course of the week at webcast at GospelRevolution.com. I want to thank everyone who listened tonight and who's listening on the archives even as we speak, and also for everybody that emailed. If, as always, your email has not been addressed yet, please stay logged on because we will get to them. Jason had an excellent second question that you could go off on, Michael, for an entire hour and a half teaching in and of itself, so we'll hold that for a later program. But
Glenn, also when the people that are listening now and those that have listened to the archives, there's so much information in this 1 hour that it's mind-boggling. So encourage others. I mean, if there's any way that you can get this into other people's ears, tell them if they want to hear what this is all about. Listen to this program, because this is what it is all about.
Yeah, this was a good sample. It's like, you know, when you go to Outback Steakhouse and you get the appetizer sampler. It had a lot of good eating tonight, as it always does. Mikey, thank you so much. And
thanks, Glenn.
Do it in 1 week's time. Also want to thank Patrick L. Jones for producing and engineering this effort, Sean O'Halloran for also his assistant, and our studio audience, Kristen Shirah, in the house tonight. We will talk to you in 1 week's time, Lord willing, and if the creek don't rise. This is Glenn Klein Online. Shalom, everybody.